Welcome to Unabridged, the weekly podcast where teachers take on books. We're your hosts. I'm Sarah, and I'm here today with Jen and Ashley.
This is Ashley. We'll chat about our Unabridged Book Club's pick of the month, recommend related books, and share our nerdy English teacher love of reading with our Unabridged highlights and with short episodes featuring targeted topics.
To follow along with our schedule, visit our website, unabridgedpod.com, where the books we read are linked for purchase. You want opinions about books? We've got them.
Hey, this is Jen. We are here today with one of our Unabridged Shorts. This one's a bonus since we are in a month with five Wednesdays. Before we get started talking about the Hate U Give movie, I just want to mention that we are on Patreon now and that we have some great content to provide Patreon subscribers. So if you head over, you can take a look at our page and the different levels that you can participate in to support Unabridged and get some nice things in return. And also follow us on Instagram. We have a lot of good activity going on at Instagram. We're really ramping up the Unabridged Book Club and have a lot of good things for you to see. So if you want to head over to Instagram, our handle is @unabridgedpod. You can also find us there on Twitter, and we have a Facebook page as well. So that's facebook.com/unabridgedpod. All right, so we're going to get started talking about the Hate U Give movie. Let's just do general thoughts first. What did you all think of the Hate U Give?
This is Sarah, and I really loved the movie. I loved it. I feel like I loved it for different reasons than I loved the book, because I do feel like there were some significant differences between mm-hmm. the two. But I did really love it. I thought it was well acted for the most part. And I really thought that the director did a great job of making a clear message, and I just thought the directing was really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just thought that he did a great job, and I really thought some of the performances were standout performances.
Yeah, this is Ashley, and overall, I thought it was phenomenal. I love The Hate U Give. It's one of my most favorite books I've read in the last couple of years, and I felt some trepidation about seeing the movie, because I think a lot of times, particularly YA novels, don't always get kind of the credit that they deserve mm-hmm. in the movie world, and then aren't as well funded and supported and that kind of thing, and then consequently the movies kind of fall flat or seem one-sided in a way that's not true about the book, or one-dimensional. But I felt like this one, was, like Sarah said, the acting was awesome. I thought that the scenes were powerful. I thought the message was powerful. I did think that there were some significant differences between what happened in the book and what happened in the film. And I also felt like those differences... I also felt like those differences... Sarah's just Instagramming over here while we record. It's
That's
fine.
My job.
It's fine. Anyway, I felt like those differences impacted the message. So I felt like, I think in some ways, Angie Thomas's message, or what I perceived to be her message with the novel, was a bit different than the message that came from the film, from George Tillman Jr.'s directing, and I imagine also from the screenplay. Mm-hmm. And I liked it. I stand by the choices that they made, but I think it'll be interesting to discuss, because I really felt like those changes were interesting and yeah. made it interesting to think about the power of film, but also the way that different people have different interpretations and have a different message to convey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I feel like I should tell the listeners, or that we should tell the listeners, that we watched it together. Yes. We were sitting in a row. At points, we were sobbing together, and we had...
Gasping. Yeah, there were some gasps.
Some tissues that we were
We weren't able to Instagram after.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I think that we were all at least emotionally impacted while mm-hmm. we were watching.
Yeah.
And I loved it, absolutely. I do think it was funny, because the next day as we started discussing it, I mean, we're going to dig into it. So I think it's not perfect. I don't think any movie's perfect. So I don't want listeners to lose sight of the fact that we are saying we loved it. So while we're going to dig into some things that maybe we didn't appreciate as much, or just acknowledge that there are changes and we all love the book. So sometimes those changes are hard.
Yeah.
That's a eternal book movie debate. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I thought it is so, it has such a big emotional impact. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a testament to the acting and the writing and the directing. Mm-hmm. And it's a long movie. And it did not feel it at mm-hmm. all. I mean,
I could not believe it when we got out of the movie. Yeah. how long the movie really was.
Same.
Especially yeah. for a YA, like yeah. an adapted YA novel. Yeah. Is, normally the movies are not as long as yeah. a normal, regular movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I just thought it was, yeah, I was enraptured throughout. I don't yeah. think there was a moment that lost my attention or that I started thinking about, like, what my kids were doing at home or anything like that. So, but yeah, so let's get into, let me just open it up to talking about some of the characters and the actors who portrayed those characters. Who were some of your favorites in the movie?
Well, yeah, go ahead.
I mean, my absolute favorite was Russell Hornsby's portrayal of Big Mav. Mm-hmm. I think it's both that he was one of my favorite characters in the story mm-hmm. and that Russell Hornsby's interpretation of him was just, I mean, he was what I thought Big Mav would be mm-hmm. in terms of the, like, quiet strength he had and the way he interacted with his kids and his wife. Like, I just thought it was perfection. I really do. I really loved his portrayal. So I would have to say that's my favorite. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I'll let someone else say their favorite before I keep going.
This is Ashley, and I'm not sure why I felt like I needed to say my name. Hey, guys.
Just to be sure.
Hey.
it's been a long day, right?
I thought Liz Stenberg was phenomenal, mm-hmm. a star. And I think that she did such a great job of showing the different sides of Star's very complex character. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. I mean, I really appreciated that. And then I also loved Regina Hall
yes.
as mm-hmm. Lisa. And I will say in the beginning, when I saw, you know, whenever you watch a film, like, and you've read the book, the whole time when you first see a character, it's really hard to not be like, that's not the character. Mm-hmm. Because I think you don't even know that you have, or at least, okay, maybe I should speak only for myself. I do not know that I have these very clear images in my mind until I see someone else. And, like, Big Mav, like, I expect him to be much bigger.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, I mean, Russell Hornsby was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And I loved him in that role. But it's like, it takes you a minute to kind of get past the way that they look different than whatever you depict mm-hmm. in your mind when you're reading. And with both of them, with Big Mav and Lisa, I was like, oh my gosh, they're so young. But of course, they had their children quite young, right. So it does make sense that they're young. But I think that when I was reading the story, just seeing them and seeing how young the actors yeah. look, you're mm-hmm. much more. I was much more aware of their youth and how they had their children so young. Mm-hmm. And so I think, like, yeah, I mean, I think that was nice to be reminded of mm-hmm. in the film, but something that I wasn't as aware of, even though I knew that in the plot, I didn't think about it as much in the book, whereas in the film, I was like, oh my gosh, they're going through all these things, and they are so young. Mm-hmm. And so not only are the kids having to go through this, but also the parents, you know, who, again, when you're visibly seeing somebody who seems so young, and then they're trying to work these things out for their teenage children, I mean, that's really difficult. And so I felt like some of that was accentuated for me mm-hmm. In the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I really appreciated the casting of some of the secondary characters who maybe didn't have as many moments, but, like, I think we'll talk more about King, but I thought Anthony Mackie as King was just great. I mean, mm-hmm. he was really menacing. I thought he was quite good at looking frightening. I think you understood why he was so intimidating to the community, maybe in some ways even more than we thought that character was in the book. I thought the actor who played Khalil, and again, this is a character who I think is quite different than he is in the book, and yeah. whose subplot, again, I want to get into that, but takes a different direction. But man, he's just charming mm-hmm. and really sweet, and you can see why, even though it's been a long time since Star saw him, that he, you know, it just feels like they haven't been apart at all. Mm-hmm. He's just, I mean, he's adorable.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's adorable, and he's really charming, and he's really sweet, and yeah. I think seems very sincere in his affection for Star.
Yeah, their chemistry seemed really authentic in the, like, I mean, just either friendship, it just seemed natural, I think.
And then two additions just to the Carter family, because I agree that Big Mab and Lisa, I mean, those actors were so great.
They were great.
And then I think the two actors who play Star's brother, so Seven, sorry, I'm scrolling Instagram right now, or IMDb right now, Lamar Johnson plays Seven and TJ Wright plays Sakani, and I just thought the way they rounded out her family. I mean, they just all genuinely seem to love each other, and they pick at each other, and they have those moments like all siblings do. I mean, this was something I loved in the book too, where they're fighting, but you also know that they're going to be there for each other when it really matters. And I think in particular TJ Wright, I mean, he is young, and there were some scenes that he really had to carry with these other great powerhouse actors, and and he did.
Was really talented.
So, yeah, I mean, I just think even, I don't think every actor in the movie is perfect, and we'll get there, but I did think that overall the casting even of smaller, like Issa Rae, isn't there just a little bit as April Ofra, and I love Issa Rae, and she is great in just this very small sliver of the movie that she's given, so.
And it's funny that you mentioned Anthony Mackie, because when I thought about King, it kind of goes back to what you said, Ashley. When I pictured him in the book, I pictured him much, much different than he was portrayed in the movie, but I thought that the movie portrayal was great. And I thought that Anthony Mackie did a great job, but it was like that first moment when I saw him, I'm like, that's King. But then, I mean, then after that, for after I got used to it, it was fine, and I thought he did a great job, but I just had a different picture in my mind.
It's funny, I thought of both of them as being physically bigger
men.
And I don't know why that is, because I mean, I just don't understand. I mean, Big Mab, because it because he has the word big. I think that probably influenced. And then I think I pictured King to be physically comparable. So then when I saw them, and both of them are handsome men, they are both fit and slim. And I think that I was like, oh, they are more physically fit than I had envisioned.
You were picturing like Biggie Small.
They are not like that. You know? but like you said, I mean, I think that he, I mean, he owned that role. And he was really formidable in it, and I was captivated by that. But yeah it is funny how you, again, I don't visualize them super clearly in my mind, but then when you see the people, you have to kind of adjust a little bit to what you thought. But
so we want to get into spoilers a little bit, and that sounds funny because if you've read the book, you might feel like the movie doesn't have spoilers, but there are some changes that if you haven't seen the movie yet, I wouldn't want to spoil. So if you don't want to know, you may want to turn off now, go watch the movie, and come back. So the first one, first question I have is just the relationship between Star and Khalil, I did think tended more to the romantic side than it did in the book. Like in the book, there were undertones, and it was an overtone in the movie. What did you think of that decision to have the romance be on the screen?
I mean, I felt like that was one of the changes that I didn't love as much, just because I felt like it wasn't needed. I felt like her feeling of like what might have been in the book felt genuine, and I felt like her sense of loss and that his, you know, that these horrible things, I mean, that he, I mean, she didn't need to feel affection for him or have kissed him in order to be devastated by his death. And I think that in some ways I wondered why it was there. And I mean, I just felt like in the book she could feel that questioning of like, did I love him? In what way did I love him? And that doesn't have to mean that he had just kissed her that night. In order for her to have those questions and to think of all the affection that she had for him, you know, that kind of thing. So I felt like it wasn't totally necessary, but.
Yeah, I feel the same. Because I feel like I like that platonic way that they had left their relationship in the book, that they loved each other, but they were such great friends. And they, and like you said, Ashley, like that they loved each other, but not, but what way did they love each other? And that was okay. But, and I didn't feel like the movie even needed that to be able to show how much she loved she loved him, because I felt like it was really clear. It really felt like the kiss was just out of the blue. And I felt like it was really clear throughout the movie the way that they portrayed Khalil and the choices that the director made, that she loved, like that they had this longstanding friendship, yeah. and that the impact of his death was so much to start even without that kiss. So like yeah. I felt like it was unnecessary and just kind of extra that they chose to do that.
Yeah. In a weird way for me, like it took away a little bit from the innocence of the relationship yeah. because I thought, you know, she knows the kiss is coming, you can see it, mm-hmm. and lets him kiss her. And she has a boyfriend. And then he says he knows she has a boyfriend. And so I'm like, ah! Like, I don't know.
Almost, yeah, I agree. Yeah.
When mm-hmm. I actually thought that the police officer was going to pull up behind them when they were pulled over.
Yeah.
And then when that didn't happen, so I thought that was why they were pulled over.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that would have, I kind of expected that because I think that's a powerful message. That, like, right. why would you pull up behind somebody unless you already suspect them mm-hmm. of something that they're not supposed to be doing? Because otherwise, why does it matter that they're on the side of the road?
Mm-hmm.
So that was what I expected. And then when that didn't happen, it was strange. I mean, again, it's like you said, Sarah, it just seemed out of the blue. And I mean, I know that then he didn't turn on his turn signal and like that's conceivably why he was pulled over. Mm-hmm. But I didn't feel like that part was necessary. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think it speaks to the way the relationship, Star's relationship with Chris was in the film versus the book, which was yeah. very different.
Yeah.
So I think that that was part of it. Is like you said, Jen, I mean, I think in the book, it would have been a lot more like she would have felt a lot more conflicted mm-hmm. about yeah. having kissed Khalil because she was so clearly in love with Chris. And in the movie, it just wasn't that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's talk about Chris a little yeah. bit. Well, so the role of Chris was played by a different actor at the end than it had been cast at the beginning because there was a controversy. The original actor, whose name I don't recall, had posted some racist things online, was fired. They had to reshoot scenes with a new actor, KJ Apa. So we don't really know what the original version of those scenes would have looked like or how many there were or anything. But, yeah, what did you all think of Chris in the movie?
Well, I felt like the relationship was not nearly as important to Star in the movie yeah. as it seemed that it was in the book. And I didn't think that the actor, I didn't think that he did a great, I just didn't think there was a lot of chemistry between the two mm-hmm. of them. And the scenes with him in it just seemed really superficial. Mm-hmm. And just, I don't know, there were just some choices that were made. And I don't know if it's because of the recasting yeah. and they were trying to get the movie done. Mm-hmm. I have no idea, but I just thought that there were so many things that were so well done in the movie that piece just seemed really weak. That mm-hmm. their whole story together just seemed really weak. And in the book, it was a huge part of the book. And
yeah.
so, I don't know. I didn't like that. That was one of the things I liked the least about the movie, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah. I mean, I was just shocked by the way he acted yeah. in the movie because I felt like he just seemed, I mean, he seemed like an ignorant idiot. I yeah. mean, sorry, I could have said that more softly or in maybe a more delicate way. But
you did,
I mean,
better than the words that were going through my mind.
I mean, because I just felt like he seemed so clueless. And I think that some of that had to do with, again, her message was more nuanced in the yeah. book than uh-huh. the film. And so some of it was, I mean, there are a lot of really dumb and unintentionally racist things that white people do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he did some of those, but like where he was like, I don't see color. Mm-hmm. And she's like, if you don't, and I think what she said back where she said, if you don't see my blackness, you don't see me, mm-hmm. was really powerful. And maybe that was the purpose, in which case it did strengthen our understanding of her character and how her race impacts her character.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's really rich. But then he suffered for, like, his character suffered for it mm-hmm. in the sense that I was like, what is wrong with this guy mm-hmm. that he is like so clueless,
and he did not appear that way in
yeah,
the book.
Yeah, in the book he doesn't appear that way. And like the whole part where there's the protesting, he's so involved. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, in the movie, the choices for him to take Kenya and Lyric and take them to a safe place, mm-hmm. and not that that's not an important thing for him to do, but it's very different than him participating in the protest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, I think if the purpose was to accentuate things about her, then that maybe that works,
mm-hmm.
but then it did not work for their relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what you said about the nuance is key, because you said he's like an ignorant idiot in the movie. Like, in the book, he was ignorant, but he was not an idiot.
Right.
And he desperately yes. wanted to fix his ignorance.
Yes.
And so he was very, And I didn't feel like the character in the movie was insincere about wanting to learn, but he just seemed to have more that idea that he already knew.
Yeah.
And that why, yeah, that he was already there and he was supportive, but he already knew all he needed to know about her. And in the book, he very much wanted to learn about her family and about where she lived. And
well, and like where the limo pulls up in Garden Heights, and then they park on the street, and he goes in. And I mean, what? What? Yeah. I mean, it was just really bizarre. Like that seemed, again, like a rather clueless and insensitive choice for him to make. Like that wouldn't be the time. Mm-hmm. If I were going to introduce myself to my partner's father, that would not be the moment that I would want to do that, you know? So then that was kind of weird. And then I felt like he, when she was so, after the incident with Haley, where she was so angry and she was like beating on the dashboard and he was like trying to soothe her as if to act like her rage was not appropriate. I couldn't understand, you know? So there were several times where I was like, why are you trying to calm her? And I mean, you know, I mean, you want to help people when they're upset. So that's not what I mean. But I also feel like it was like he didn't understand her rage.
Right.
And then in the book, I felt like you said, Jen, it's not like he had all the answers for sure. But he had some idea of why she would be feeling so devastated and so furious and all those things. And I felt like maybe he just didn't, he didn't have that at all.
So, yeah, Haley, you mentioned Haley. That's another interesting character who I don't think she's as different from the Haley in the book as Chris is different from the Chris in the book. But I did think, I mean, there are some very different scenes with Haley in the movie. So there's a scene where Haley is basically confronting Star about the fact that Khalil kind of deserved it, and that because he pulled his hairbrush out and he looked dangerous, the police officer had a right to shoot him. And Star grabs her Haley's hairbrush and basically, I don't want to say attacks her, like she doesn't hit her, but she threatens her with it. And Haley is cowering on the ground, crying. I mean, that's basically the end then of their relationship. So what did you all think of their relationship and then of that sort of culminating incident? Maybe there's probably a better word there.
I felt like the impact of showing showing her what it felt like was powerful in the sense of the drama. So, like, I think that part, I think it just depends on the purpose.
Right.
But I felt like it made Star seem cruel and menacing. And I don't think that's any part of her character. And I feel like in the book, when they have the altercation, she just, I mean, beats the crap out of her because she wouldn't shut her mouth. And I feel like that is a teenager reaction. Maybe it's a reaction lots of people want to have, but a lot of times as an adult, you withhold that. But it is very often that, like, one kid runs their mouth and the other kid eventually hits him in the face. Like that. Whereas the other, with the hairbrush, it felt so aggressive. Just outwardly. Yeah, I mean, in some ways it was less violent because she didn't touch her, like you said. But then it felt like, you know, she wanted her to know what it felt like. Yeah, but I don't know. It just wasn't consistent with what I saw of Star's character.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And sometimes I wonder with films that are adapted from a first-person book, if that is sometimes the way in which the director chose to show Star's rage, so that it would show the reason then and the end where she is able to get up. Because, like, during the book, she's telling us. We know what's happening. And, I mean, they use voiceover a lot during the film because I wondered how they were going to do that, because so much of the things that we read in the book and learn about Star are because she's telling the story, but it's not necessarily an action. It's something that's just happening, you know, with her being our narrator. So sometimes I wonder if that is why, or, I mean, I wonder if that is one of the reasons to be able to show exactly how much rage and hurt that Star has, so then by the time we get to the protest, that it shows the reason why she's able to get up there and, you know, fight for what is right. So I don't know. I don't, but I did think it definitely seemed way out of character from what I knew of Star from the book, but it was an interesting choice, I have to say.
Yeah, like I said, I feel like it was really dramatic.
Very impactful.
And impactful. You know, I think it impactful to all the people watching who then had to imagine what that would feel like. And I think, you know, that has an impact.
So. So the other good friend that Star has in the book is one who died when, what was she, 10? Mm-hmm. Natasha, who I thought her role in the movie was bigger. And maybe that's just a proportional thing. The movie was smaller and had fewer characters, so maybe it just felt bigger. But I really liked the fact that it was bigger and that they emphasized Natasha and Khalil and Star as all being close, mm-hmm. and playing Harry Potter together and playing those roles, mm-hmm. and seeing how one by one they were killed by violence of one type or another. Mm-hmm. What did you all think? Did you like that they had increased that role and that played a bigger presence, or did you feel like that took away from other friendships?
I mean, I liked it. I thought that it really it emphasized the friendship that they had, and I thought that it made Khalil's death and Natasha's death both seem more impactful almost, mm-hmm. because of showing that Star was the out of three best friends, yeah. she was the only one who survived, mm-hmm. her teens. I mean, mm-hmm. and I thought that message was pretty, like I said, impactful. So in that sense, I thought I liked the way that Natasha's death was her friendship with Natasha was focused on, and even with the Harry Potter wands and the fact that I just thought that just shows this innocence of these kids who were just, you know, best friends, and mm-hmm. they played Harry Potter and they did all this stuff, and then were taken away by gun violence of one type or another.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I think that's true. I do. I mean, I think the thing that was strange to me was just the contrast with, like, in the book, she very much has Chris and Maya. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, her friendship with Haley falls apart, but Maya is very much by her side. And I felt, mm-hmm. like, I mean, my personal opinion of Maya in the movie was it was, like, a weak, yeah. character. She was not... Star seemed very alone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I think in the book she wasn't so isolated. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like the amping up Natasha's role was also showing how alone she was. Mm-hmm. And in the book, I mean, I think even though her experiences were unique to her, mm-hmm. she did have people who loved her and supported her more outwardly, I think, than you saw, yeah. in the book.
That's a good point.
So one big character who is missing from the film is Devante. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, I did not realize that he was missing until partway through the book. So King beat Seven. And Sarah looked at me and said, that doesn't happen in the book. And so I was working through my brain, and I was like, oh, it's because in the book, King beats Devante. Mm-hmm. And because they got rid of that character entirely, I mean, I felt like it had, like, all these little side effects that subtly changed the message of the film, mm-hmm. even though I wasn't wondering, where's Devante, like, from moment one? I mean,
I was kind of surprised. Yeah. Like, yeah. I did think, like, when is he coming? Yeah. And then I was like, oh, he's not coming. That's strange, because I feel like it was a really major
thing. It's just been longer. I mean, I haven't read the book for a while, so I think that might be a part of it.
Yeah, I felt like, I mean, you know, that was a pretty major subplot, mm-hmm. in the book, mm-hmm. that goes throughout, and, like, it's like Big Mav's project, and he and Carlos, that's part of what brings them together, is all the effort that they make, that they're each making to help Devante, and you know, Devante and Chris are friends, mm-hmm. in the book, and so I felt like, and I just think a lot of what he said in the book, I mean, again, of course, you have a lot more time in a book to work through those things, but I just think a lot of what he said was what resonated for me, mm-hmm. about the helplessness that people feel and the inability to get out of these horrific, mm-hmm. circumstances, and the rationalization of why people are in gangs and how those gangs support people who otherwise have nothing. I just felt like that part was kind of missing from the film, and I do think it was probably, I mean, because like y'all said, it was long.
Yeah.
Particularly for a YA, you know, interpretation of a YA book, I think it's a pretty long film already. So, mm-hmm. I imagine that's why that subplot got left out. Yeah. But it did seem like there were some things there that I missed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. I feel like without Devante there, it kind of took away from the both sides of the gang the situation. Mm-hmm. And I also felt like it really took away from the building of Garden Heights as not just this community where bad things happen, but this great community where people mm-hmm. look out for each other. Because in the book, Big Mav has him as takes Devante on to try to mentor him, and then like Carlos, like you said. But mm-hmm. I mean, I just felt like without him there, Garden Heights didn't seem as big of a part of the story mm-hmm. as I felt like. I mean, I felt like the setting in the book was this huge part of the whole narrative, and in the movie I felt like Garden Heights was just there to serve the purpose of a place where these characters were mm-hmm. living and things that were happening. Mm-hmm. It wasn't this huge part of it. And I felt like, because there was all this pride in the community, it was just, I don't know. I thought that his being missing really kind of took away from mm-hmm. some of the other things that I really liked about the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I missed that at the end as well, just to jump ahead, that at the end, for me, it was a big moment in the book when the community stood together against mm-hmm. King.
Yeah.
And that you, like, that was a scene that you witnessed them sort of gathering their courage and stepping forward and speaking out against him. And so in the film, that happens in a voiceover. Mm-hmm. And again, I understand about length of the film and all that, mm-hmm. but I think because some of those, like the other store owners, aren't developed earlier, I can see not wanting to give over the end of the movie to them.
Mm-hmm.
But just to see King locked up and for Star to say in voiceover that the community stood up and he was arrested, I thought that was a big moment for me mm-hmm. when I was reading that just didn't happen.
And like with Mr. Lewis, I mean, even though he was a minor character in the book, I still feel like he played a big part uh-huh. in the story. So mm-hmm. I missed his. I mean, he was in there, but
it's almost like a mention.
Yeah,
yeah.
Just at the very.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I felt like at the very beginning of the film, I mean, there was like that nice montage of the Garden Heights in the way that I had envisioned mm-hmm. it, and she was doing the voiceover, and I was like, yeah, that's totally what I envisioned. And you saw that community, and she talked about like living there, and but then we lost that thread did not mm-hmm. continue. So
until
I thought
like
in the beginning,
end.
Right?
Yeah, it was like so you kind of lost it was like bookends, mm-hmm. you know, and then in the middle.
Yeah, I also really missed Uncle Carlos's larger role in the book.
Larger and more nuanced.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I felt like that was one I really missed mm-hmm. Because I think he was such a great foil for Big Mav.
Uh-huh.
And so I missed that back and forth and kind of the conversation in the book working things out that I think all of us are working out. And so, like, they didn't even have many scenes together. Mm-hmm. So to have them in isolation and then, like you said, Ashley, to have it be a less nuanced conversation between Star and Uncle Carlos. Yeah, that was disappointing.
Yeah, and some of what he said was kind of shocking. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. I felt like, I mean, where he got in the specifics about the white guy in the suit who's the drug dealer and basically him saying that he would have him drop his weapon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was a pretty, I mean, that's just an awful thing to think that a police officer might think that.
Right.
And mm-hmm. I'm not saying, I mean, I'm sure clearly we have, you know, horrible things happening that suggest that maybe people do think that sometimes. Mm-hmm. But then for him, I just didn't feel like that was his character at all in the book. I felt like in the book he did try to say, I wasn't there and I do not know
mm-hmm.
and I cannot know. And I did like, I mean, when he said in the film, he was like working out all the things that the police officer is thinking when you pull someone over and how if they're confrontational back, then like there's things that you think about that. But even that was different in the movie. Mm-hmm. Like Khalil was much more confrontational than what we saw in the book. I mean, he wasn't like outwardly doing a whole lot, but he was like, he was picking at the mm-hmm. officer. Whereas like in the book, we didn't see that at all. So I think because that happened and then Carlos was saying those things, you know, maybe that's why he answered differently.
Yeah.
Because that scene was different. But I mean, in the book, I felt like at first he was like, I don't know what I would have done. And then he's like, you were just kids, you know, and he mm-hmm. comes around to really being like, he made the wrong decision and I know that what he did was wrong. And he never comes around to that in the film. So, a much smaller role and then a lot more superficial, it felt mm-hmm. like.
Yeah. Because he was such a big support for Star during in the book. And mm-hmm. I just didn't get... I mean, I felt like they tried to mention it, but it didn't connect.
It didn't feel.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't feel it so much. Mm-hmm.
So another big change, and this one I thought was so powerful, was the scene where the police officers confront Big Mav and basically are, I don't know the word to use. I don't have a good verb right now. But they are confronting him in front of his family while they are having dinner in a restaurant. I mean, it starts with an altercation with King. Yeah. And then the police come up.
And they run away.
And I mean, I found myself, that was one where I was absolutely sobbing because, and that was one where I thought the actor who played Connie was amazing because you see this whole scene and of course it's horrible to watch him going through this in front of his family, in front of an entire restaurant of people. And then at the end, you see Sakani is just beside himself. I mean, it's just, he feels so helpless. But yeah, I also think that there are some changes in that scene that sort of change why the police might have done that. I mean, what did you all think? Sorry, I just rambled on for a long time.
Well, I wondered why it was... I wondered why there was the altercation with King. Mm-hmm. Because I felt like in the book, first of all, it was his store. Mm-hmm. So it's his property, you know, that's where that happens instead of at the restaurant. And then I just felt like it was totally unprovoked in the book. Whereas, like, in the film, I mean, nothing that they did, they were way too aggressive for the fact that all he was doing was sort of having a bit of a verbal spat with someone that was already over. But even so, there was a verbal spat happening that, you know, they could have potentially considered to be problematic, and then that they would have had a reason to investigate a little bit. I don't know. So then that was strange to me. But yeah. I loved the stuff with the cameras and them filming and how that made the police officers back down and how, you know, they were like, we have the right to tell the story and how Star really took ownership of that moment and was like, I have the right to record. I thought that part was really powerful.
Well, especially so in contrast really to earlier when she started to film the police officer who pulled over her and Khalil and he told her to stop and she did.
Yeah.
And then to see that she now... Yeah, that she is now confident enough, right, to continue filming, even though they've told her to stop, and that everyone else is also recording, that it has spread through the crowd.
That was a really powerful visual image of all of them with their phones out getting that documentation.
And also, I thought it was so powerful seeing it from outside and inside, the way they kept switching the camera, because, I mean, like, just thinking, like, because I thought there were some problems with the scene, but I also thought the way that they set it up with the family at dinner and, like, them joking around and saying blessing and doing all this, like, the things that families do when they go out to dinner and just talking and talking about dessert and all that, and then that one thing happens, and then them filming the family's reaction and also what's happening with Big Mav, I mean, I thought that was really powerful. Yeah. So I understand why they did it, but I do feel like the motive for, I mean, I definitely think that in the book, it seemed like it was just totally, you know, that nothing had happened. I mean, like, they were, the police were being, they were harassing.
That's right. And they were just like, it's because it was the neighborhood. Like, we're just gonna, you know, show how powerful we are.
Right. Mm-hmm. And clearly there was no reason for it at the restaurant either in the movie, but in the book, it just seems so, like, just a power
more
play.
Out of the blue.
So this is turning into a very long short episode, so I want to talk about
there's so much to talk about.
I know, two things that happen at the end and then we will try to wrap up. So one big moment, and again, man, this is a major spoiler, so if you don't want to know and you haven't switched out yet, now's the time. At the end, when Sakani, when they're confronting King after he has set fire to Mav's store with the kids in it, and Sakani comes up with the gun that he has taken out of, you know, the back of, Mav keeps a gun kind of tucked in the back of his pants, and Sakani's taken it, and he points the gun at King, and they're police officers, and I was freaking out, because I didn't know what was going to happen.
When the police officers are pointing their gun at Sakani.
Right, because it's so different from the book, and you think, I was having a hard time. It was very powerful, but I had a really hard time with that scene. I think we were all gasping.
Yeah. I think I closed my, I mean, I think I put my hands over my eyes during, like, for a moment, because it was so unexpected, because having read the book twice, and I mean, you know, I knew that this clearly wasn't I was very shocked. But I thought that it was really powerful, and I thought that it definitely, with the voiceover and everything, I think that it really made a point.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I didn't think it was very realistic in terms of what happened after he pulled the gun.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there would have been some consequences for a lot of the people there. I mean, having pulled a gun on someone, I don't know, just having the firearms and like brandishing them in the open and cops are there. I feel like the ramifications would have been a lot worse than for like Sakani and Mav for having a gun. And I mean, I just felt like that was probably unrealistic, but I did feel like it was a powerful way to make the point of the book and the whole thing with Tupac's message.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really felt like that made a huge point.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's exactly. I felt like, I mean, I was so taken aback. It's hard when you've read the book and something that different happens, because I just think part of your brain, you can't help that, like, a big part of your brain is like, this didn't happen. This didn't happen. This is totally not correct. And then, I mean, I was also terrified. I didn't know how far it was going to go, because then it's like, because it didn't happen in the book, you know, you think, are they going to shoot him? Yeah. I mean, I was terrified. And I think that was the director's intent, is for you to think, are they going to shoot this child?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they will. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a really powerful moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so I agree with what you said, Sarah, that just like it was the most impactful scene, I think, to me, as far as that message of what do you expect? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the hate you give, and exactly, I mean, everything about thug life that they talk about with Tupac, and just showing that, like, what, I mean, I think it just both shows how Big Mav decides for his family that things are going to change. He and Lisa, they're like, this is not going to be our life. Mm-hmm. Things are going to change. But also, simultaneously shows why, for so many people, that decision is impossible.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is really powerful, you know. And just sort of to see how King got where he was. I mean, I think it also, when Sakani's pointing his gun at King, you're thinking, this is how people wind up in situations where they become someone like King. And I mean, I think that's really...
Well, and I think the power of, I mean, Star says, now I understand Sakani is the hate that has happened because of everything else. And the irony, because Big Mav has said over and over that Sakani's name means joy. Mm-hmm. So to have the character in the book who's named Joy come to represent the hate, and then you see what Star does by stepping in front of the gun and basically giving herself over to stop him from being killed and to stop him from killing someone else. I mean, that whole sequence of events was very powerful, even though I agree. Like, there was some, there needed to be some suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm okay. I mean, I think that for them to be able to carry out that message so succinctly and, like, to end the story, I mean, I could suspend my disbelief.
Yeah.
Because I certainly didn't want anything to happen. You know, like, I'm okay suspending my disbelief because I didn't want anything bad to happen to the Carter family because, I mean, you know, I just
because
I
all love they were them. Doing was trying to protect themselves.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, like, the whole scene leading up to that, I mean, King was so much more directly trying to kill them.
Yes.
Yeah.
In the movie, whereas, like, in the book, I think, you know, you don't see him. You know that he sent someone to damage the store.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like they see the kids going in there. And you think that's Aisha's son, who he's throwing that explosive.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that also goes to when he beat up Seven. I mean, that's a big difference for the Carters, with him beating up Seven and not Devontae, because Devontae was selling for him. You know, there were some other, like, circumstances that connected him to Devontae, but for him to grab Seven and beat him up, that's a big difference.
Yeah, I think in general it seemed like in the book, the violence, even the violence that King endorsed, was more like just business to a certain extent, and not that meant that, you know what I mean? Like, it's the people who were getting killed, that was still wrong, but it was, like, more containable, whereas this seemed like more emotional violence. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to do something purposefully to profoundly devastate other people. Right. And I just didn't, I don't know, I didn't see that as much in the book part. So then I think that led to, but I think that worked in the storyline of the movie, because right. then that mm-hmm. leads to the moment where Sukarni points the gun.
Right.
Because yeah. I think in the book, even though King is a, you know, is like a, I mean, he is the head of the King Lords, mm-hmm. he still seems more human, I yeah. think, well, whereas like in the movie, I mean, he, and again, Anthony Mackie was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was menacing.
Yeah.
He was cold. He was calculating. And I think mm-hmm. all those things led to that moment where Sukarni could build up all that hate. Mm-hmm.
Well, and in the book, I feel like King and Mav, they had this longstanding relationship, and that Mav went to prison for yeah. something that King did, even though King was angry with Mav and with Star and with what they were doing, he still had this...
Right.
This,
yeah.
Like, he owed like, them.
Yeah, he
like,
owed them because Mav had served yeah. time for him. So,
and that's mentioned once in the movie, and but, that kind of goes away.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. yeah. Yeah, and I think there is that moment, like, when Star gets in the car with him, and then Mav comes out and sits in the car with King, and they're talking,
yeah.
where they seem more
congenial.
Congenial, yeah. absolutely. And yeah, and but that's that one tiny moment. Whereas in general, he's a much more
menacing
mm-hmm. and uncaring.
Right. Well, character. When you think about the restaurant scene, when the confrontation between King yeah. and Big Mav leads to the police assaulting Big Mav, and Sukarni is broken down by that, and then you're like, oh. Yeah, I mean, you can totally see yeah. how his mind would mean it's all King's fault.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So. And, I mean, I think when Big Mav walks out there, he's walking out there because King is yeah. standing
to kill
there.
His children.
Right, and he's grabbing to kill his
for,
family.
He's so. Grabbing for his gun.
Yeah.
And that's when you know it's missing. And you're yeah. like, where is it? He just forgot it. And no, yeah. Sukarni has it.
Yeah.
Okay, so the last thing we want to talk about,
this
I think.
This is going to be a very long, short episode.
I will say there are a couple of articles, so we'll just put those in the show notes
yeah.
and maybe talk about those on Instagram. Is the decision at the end, I felt like this was a big thing. They decided to stay in Garden Heights. And in the book, they choose to move to, what's the other neighborhood called? I can't remember.
Where
but
Carlos
Uncle
lives,
Carlos's
yeah.
neighborhood. Because Lisa is determined that even though they want to help the community and they're going to keep the store there, she needs to keep her kids safe by moving them mm-hmm. to a safer neighborhood.
And she
to
gets
live.
That new job, mm-hmm. and that right. enables them to be able to move.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. in the movie, the end is they decide to stay in Garden Heights, and they're planting shrubs. And but that felt like, for me, that felt like a big change in message. I mean, and I think it's a, I think it's a positive one. I want to say that because I do think seeing Garden Heights as a place that can be nurtured and can grow mm-hmm. and can, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to go too symbolic with the planting of the shrub and the growing
well, I think
of
that
the
was on purpose,
community.
Right? I mean, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, what did you all, did you like that? Did you not like that?
I did like it, but I also felt like the way that Lisa was portrayed in the book, and I mean, I felt like that she was pretty true to character in the movie. And she was so determined that they were getting out yeah. for the safety of her kids. And as a mother, I mean, I love my community, but if I felt like my kids mm-hmm. were threatened in any way, I would be out, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, and like, mm-hmm. you
especially
know,
after what happens with Sukarni,
yeah.
I expected, so when that scene happened, and then Star steps in, and again, I think that whole part, the voiceover and all of that was really powerful, mm-hmm. but I also expected that immediately after that, they would leave.
Yeah.
Because that was so much more extreme mm-hmm. than what happened in the book. And so then when they stayed, I was surprised. And I think, I think it's a hopeful message mm-hmm. because I think you want to believe that the people who can improve things and make a difference will be there mm-hmm. to improve things and to make a difference. And so I don't think it was untrue to what, to the way that the storyline went. But then that part, it was just hard to imagine that they would stay.
And I feel like if Lisa would have been waffling more, like if she, because she just seemed very, she seemed like a strong woman.
Right.
She seemed very determined and resolute in her decision. So I feel like if she were more like Mav, mm-hmm. I feel like I wouldn't have felt like I just felt like she was determined that they were leaving. So that's the part. But I mean, I did like the message that it sent. But I just felt like Lisa would be like, nope.
All right. Well, I told you at the beginning that we all love the movie and that we were going to dig in and maybe talk about some things that we like the book better. Yeah. I mean, I still like even after everything we talked about that maybe we didn't appreciate as much. I would go watch it again, and I would tell others to go watch it
absolutely.
Because I think it's
Yeah, phenomenal. I think everybody should see it. It's phenomenal.
And I mean, I think even though I like the book better because, I mean, normally it's rare that I don't like the book better. It's still, I mean, I just thought the movie was phenomenal. And it's probably going to be in one of my top movies that I've seen, especially for a YA adaptation. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't think of one that has been done better.
Do you have comments or opinions about what you heard today? We would love to hear them.
You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher, on Instagram and Twitter at UnabridgedPod, or on the web at UnabridgedPod.com, or on our Patreon page.
We'd like to thank Jared Featherstone, who composed our theme music, Strings of Light. Many thanks to Katie Amy of Amy Photography, our podcast photographer, and Tim Rieger, our videographer. Thanks for listening to Unabridged.